Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Rosary O'Neill and Rory O'Neill Schmidt, the mother-daughter co-authors of The Haunted Guide to New Orleans. It is a great pleasure to welcome back the mother-daughter writing duo of Rory O'Neill Schmidt and Rosary O'Neill, whose new book is A Haunted Guide to New Orleans. Rosary has published 19 plays. She founded Southern Rep, the first repertory theater in New Orleans, and is a professor emerita at Loyola University, New Orleans. Rory O'Neill Schmidt is a filmmaker, photographer, and author who manages faculty development at the University of Southern California and Bovard College. The two have previously collaborated on books about Edgar Degas, Kate Chopin, and voodoo in New Orleans, and now A Haunted Guide. It's that spooky time of year, you two. Welcome back.
Hello.
Thank you so much for having us. We're happy to be here.
Well, thanks for joining us by phone, Rory. Now, you are definitely here for the spooky season, I must say. And one of the intriguing things you write about in the beginning of this book is how your belief in ghosts is a family affair that was passed down from Grandmother Nix, who lived in a haunted house on South Carrollton.
That's correct, yeah.
So tell us about her, Rosary. How did she tell you all about this?
As a young girl, I lived in a state of terror because she really enjoyed tormenting her grandchildren with tales of horror so that, you know, before we'd go to bed, she had six granddaughters and she'd have them wrapped around her because she didn't really want the grandsons at the house because they were kind of like, I don't know, bad, or they played their dirty things. And we would sit there wrapped and she would tell us these stories, many of which I think are true. If they aren't true, she told them with a feeling that they were true. And even today, you know, I double lock my bedroom door and also my door outside, and I have a crucifix and a rosary by me in the bed.
Serious prevention,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, serious prevention of all levels, yeah.
What about you, Rory? What did you grow up thinking about?
You know, my mom would recount these stories from my great-grandma Nix, and I heard them so many times that I almost had them memorized. But the way Mom performed them, she actually sounded like a lot like my great-grandmother, who I never met. And so I actually got to listen to some recordings, and my mom and her grandmother sound so familiar. And they're both incredible performers, and they can terrify and excite you and, you know, make you want to run out the house because you're so scared.
What? I love the idea of children running shrieking onto South Carrollton.
Yeah.
Now, Rory, and there are some wonderful first-person ghost stories in this guide, and you talk about holiday sightings of French Quarter ghosts at Halloween and Carnival.
Yes. So one of the goals, Mom and I, were both researchers, and I wanted to actually meet with people who said that they've seen ghosts and learn more about what their encounters were like. And Susan, oh my goodness, it's just hard to deny that something happens. Our spirits go somewhere when we die, because people keep appearing. These ghosts keep appearing. One woman, the lady in white ghost, appeared at the foot of the bed of a friend of ours who lived in the French Quarter, who's an usher at St. Louis Cathedral. Mm-hmm. And she had to barter with this ghost to tell her, you know, you can have the house when I'm out of town for work, but when I'm here, please leave. Yeah, I mean,
so I did like that one.
Yes. And so we're just learning, you know, a guardian angel ghost who tells a friend of ours where she can find the corpse of her grandmother who disappeared during Hurricane Katrina.
That was chilling. That was really chilling.
Yes, she goes to the police and they say, yes, you can meet him, but you have to go to the cemetery. He died 20 years ago. Mm. And so all these different accounts, it's terrifying and exciting. for us, but it also leaves a lot of mystery because we don't have all the answers. We can just tell more of the stories, the accounts that we learned.
Well, the first person stories are a lot of fun to read. But Rosary, you tracked down a lot of ghost hangouts, and one, not surprisingly for you, is Le Petit Theater. And Steve, a person who worked there, met an extremely aggressive ghost.
I know, that was really amazing because Steve Thurber, I'm mentioning his last name, was just such a solid intellectual. You'd be the last person you'd expect to have had these experiences where he was sort of thrust down in the office by some kind of vile creature. And apparently, like Phantom of the Opera, there are certain ghosts that kind of haunt Le Petit Théâtre. And so I don't really think he made it up. It's impossible that someone that solid could make up something so freakish.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you think about the theater, it's a place that calls for spiritual things. Theater was founded by the Greeks as a spiritual thing. And the artists, when they go out, are terrified. They call upon every god they can to get out there. So if there was somebody who was murdered or hurt there, which we have evidence to believe, why wouldn't they show up there?
I mean, of course.
It's a place, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, so many French Quarter buildings are rumored to be haunted. But I love that the Hermann Grima house had happy, helpful ghosts.
We learned that there are different kinds of spirits. Some can be helpful, and they can make their presence known by, like, the scent of flowers, lavender or roses. They can warm up the temperature on a cold day outside. And so there are ways that even after we die, some like to continue to welcome us into their homes. And they remind us, you know, that they're still there.
Now tell us about the Lillari Mansion. That's one that wouldn't be populated by happy, helpful ghosts, I don't think.
That's supposed to be pretty terrifying. Still, people walk like a block away not to go in front of it. I have not had the experience of anything terrifying in there, but of all the places that I've studied, it had the most persecution of slaves and endangered people. It was just pretty horrifying. So there's a sense of evil in that place. But I think we have to remember that ghosts do come through electronics. I mean, how many of us have not been in a house, our own or others, where the lights start to blink? And so that's like the first thing, or where the window sort of pops open, or we hear a crackling. And, you know, I had the experience, my sister died 2 years ago, and I was trying to find out a medication that she took and how much of it she took. And I thought, I should have invited her. And all of a sudden on my computer, I have an email from her that was like 5 years ago, pops up and tells me exactly what to take. Did I get this 5 years ago or did she create it for me? I don't know, but I got the answer to my question. So before electronics, I don't know. Must be through wind, through rain, through sounds they hear.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Rory?
You know, I would just remind everyone who's listening or readers that you need to protect yourself. At first, I was very open to all spirits, but then I realized, no, I'm not open to all because there are evil forces that hang around at certain locations where terrible things were done, and they kind of leave their imprints. And so I would just suggest, remind viewers that, you know, there are things you can do to protect yourself, like don't go inside the house. Cross the other side of the street, say a prayer, carry a rosary or carry a some kind of religious or spiritual object that gives you strength. Meditate, light a candle, invite the positive forces. And I think that important message for our listeners.
How do you tell the difference, Rory, between a good ghost and a demon, if you will?
I think that you first feel it in the body before you see anything, right? I mean, you just, it's this gut feeling that you get, and you just have to be careful. Like with Stephen's account at Le Petit, he knew not to open that door. Mm-hmm. There's something telepathically that was telling him, or instinctually, or I don't know, spirits whispering, or somehow they're communicating with us. But I would just say you have to trust your instinct.
In life as in ghost, I mean.
That's right. Yeah,
now, I was very curious that you chose and prove by your lights that the Pharmacy Museum is the most haunted place in New Orleans. Why would that be?
Well, there was so much death there. There was murder, like, on the third floor. There were operations done on women that were dying. I mean, there were so many horrific acts there that apparently some people are buried behind in this place, and there's this demonic feeling when you walk into it that you feel, oh my God, what happened here?
And one of the things, too, that we learned is so many people have different perspectives of haunted places. So, you know, when I was at Napoleon House, this amazing restaurant with this incredible history, you know, just talking to people there and things that they heard, Susan, like they would hear knocking coming from the inside, once the doors were all locked up, once no one was there. But, you know, this building has been around for over 200 years, right? So you think about who's still remaining there. And there's so many stories. And, Mom, this is why I think we need to write another ghost book. People keep just telling us. You know, you ask them, what do you think about ghosts? And almost everyone I talk to has some story, or they have a relative or a friend who has a story. People who couldn't afford to have funerals or be buried in the cemetery downtown at St. Louis number 1 or 2, they would be buried either illegally in a nearby yard, or they would be buried inside the walls of a house. Oh. And so when people are doing these renovations, either building pools or redoing house, they're finding bodies. I mean, this is why New Orleans is haunted, because they're literally behind the wall.
Also because it's such an old city.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You feel that, yeah.
Now, the cemeteries, you might expect, of course, would be haunted. But I do have to congratulate you on appealing to the tourist market with hotels and restaurants.
Well, there's just been a lot of ghosts in these places.
Right.
We don't want to, you know, Mont Leon is just loaded with this child that died there as a small infant. His parents apparently come back grieving. All sorts of things happen on the 14th floor. I mean, even when you go into the restaurant, and Rory, you might talk about your experience when you were spending the night there, I guess, this past month.
Yes, Maurice. I think children ghosts are the most scary.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the most terrifying for me personally. You'd hear something at night, you know, in the room, and nothing is there. You feel like someone's there. But I mentioned this to some staff, and they said, oh yeah, Maurice, he's around all the time. He's playful. So he likes to take things off the housekeeping carts and take them. But, you know, some of the other spirits who are around might not be. Like a maitre d' we talked to, he was preparing a plate, and he felt a human hand grab his shoulder and pull them back. And then he turned around and nothing's there. And so it's not just the children ghosts haunting these different places in New Orleans. As we know, you know, thousands of people died from epidemics over the years. And so their spirits still remain. And some, I would say, I mean, I might like the glamour of Antoine's or some Commander's Palace in the afterlife.
Right.
Why not? But some do remain there.
Well, tell us about the Commander's Palace ghost.
Apparently, the original owner of Commander's Palace was having an affair with someone. And there are sightings of him coming back to serve people, whatever, and seeing his girlfriend across the room, another ghost, and waving at her and then scooting around. We don't go into too much detail on the names of these people because they, you know, still have heirs here. But it was that tension that still exists in Commander's Palace with these two entities that return. Do you want to see more on that, Rory? Or is that enough?
I would just say that, you know, with the ghosts at these different restaurants, you might just see at the corner, out of the corner of your eye.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it might just be for a second, and then you look around and it's gone. And so much so that I think people just think that, oh, they just imagined it. So these different spirits appear for just a very short period of time, or they can appear. I think there was a ghost sighting in the basement with wine bottles being knocked off a shelf. A little girl running down the stairs. So, you know, there's so many different accounts, you just don't know.
And online, occasionally you'll see pictures, you know, pictures of ghosts that were taken, I don't know, the basement of Antoine's, or the ghost of that terrible ghost at Muriel's, where they still have a room sectioned off because he wants to be able to come and have his wine and use his place. And if he doesn't have that wine, they're prepared for him. He throws a tantrum and destroys all the glasses and cups and everything. I mean, there are people have taken actually pictures of his face in the wall. So I believe these ghosts are really there. On the other hand, you're on this tight wire that you want to believe too much in case they come to your house. If you have a little bit of doubt there, maybe they'll say, I'm going to go see her.
I know Poppy Ticker has a great story about the ghost at Two Shacks. So,
It seems like all these people come back to restaurants. What it is that attracts, what do you think, Rory? Why do these ghosts want to come to places of food?
Hungry.
Good times.
I think they're hungry. I mean, I think ghosts are attracted to life because, you know, that's what they don't have anymore. I think that's why people have these ghost encounters where they're sleeping and they wake up and there's a ghost staring at them. I mean, they're almost mesmerized by it. And I think also, I'd imagine they long for the excitement and the thrill of eating just decadent foods and touching beautiful things and you know, being in these gorgeous places again. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We do have gorgeous places for them to visit.
Mm.
Now, some of the other things you touch on, of course, are voodoo altars, and there are so many of those around town. So talk a little bit about those, because I think it's charming how many people have them in their homes.
Well, my mother and grandmother had altars in their houses, but they were Catholic altars. They had statues, whatever they prayed. But voodoos also include ancestors. Rory, why don't you talk about that real voodoo altar, which expands on the Catholic altar.
Yes, and I always want to make sure that we're respectful to voodoo. Mom and I wrote a book about New Orleans voodoo a few years ago. We had the opportunity to really understand the sacred religion and the practice of having these altars as a form of reverence, you know, to your ancestors. You know, like I'm actually looking at mine right now. I've got a picture of my cousin Michael. I've got a picture of my cousin Jenny, my grandmother, my dog Greta Garbo. You know, it's just a way it's a way to honor those that have passed before us and remember them and even call on them for support. And I think also it's a good reminder that we're not here very long.
Why not?
You know, we don't know how long we have, and that's we're going to become ancestors one day, so we need to do all we can to live each day and do the best we can.
That's the lesson of this book, to be sure. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Rosary O'Neill and Rory O'Neill, the mother-daughter co-authors of The Haunted Guide to New Orleans. Now, tell us about the International Shrine of Marie Laveau, which is another one of my favorites.
Sure. This is at the New Orleans Healing Center, and it's right in the lobby there, and it's right outside the Isle of Salvation Botanica, which is owned and run by our friend, the voodoo priestess, Sally Ann Glassman. But it's this gorgeous statue of Marie Laveau where people actually come and they leave things. So and part of the devotion in voodoo during ceremonies is you bring an item to honor that person. So if the saints or the Loire or the ancestor liked chocolate cake, that's what you bring. For Marie Laveau, she was a hairstylist, and so people might leave, you know, rhinestone barrettes, or they might leave a comb or a brush or things that she would have enjoyed. And it's just a time to go and to celebrate this incredibly powerful woman who was so passionate, who visited the sick, who visited people in jail, who helps families and the poor and stood up for women. I mean, who danced with snakes in Congo Square. I mean, to have that sort of excitement and power and strength and resilience, even to this day, 100 years later, we still admire and respect her and pray to her. I even have a statue of Marie Laveau here in my office.
Now, some of our great public spaces have a real spiritual dimension as well. You know, Congo Square, Armstrong Park, St. Elizabeth's Orphanage. I wonder if you talk a little bit about that.
Well, St. Elizabeth's, of course, has been turned into condominiums.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, but I remember when years ago it was an orphanage for little girls. A beautiful, magnificent brick building, very high ceilings, and Anne Rice, of course, bought it. And at first, I don't know if you knew this, but she had a museum for her dolls. Anne loved dolls.
And you talk a lot, you have an entry about dolls in this book, which
is so interesting. Yeah. Rory has created a film on this particular, a trailer to the book, and in it she has taken pictures of dolls in mansions. So apparently, Rory, you might talk about this, the most feared object of ghosts is a doll.
Well, some people believe that dolls are hosts. So when a body dies, the spirit is, frantically looking for a place to go because they don't want to go to the next dimension, so they remain in a doll. And so these kind of demonic dolls, their spirit lives in. I think that's why people are kind of scared of them, because especially some of these antique dolls, Mom, even the ones that you had as a girl growing up and gave me and Dale and Rochelle are terrifying, just how realistic they look.
Passed down from Grandma Nix, I know.
Right.
She keeps going on,
Now, you can't really write about haunted New Orleans without writing about Anne Rice.
Well, you know, I loved Anne Rice.
I know.
She was a terrific, terrific writer and a terrific philanthropist. And anyway, talking about she had the dolls of her daughter who had died of a mysterious blood disease. She had these dolls all sort of all around the walls in what she called her doll museum. But eventually she sold that and moved on. Anne Rice was afraid of ghosts because, I mean, if you listen to any of her, and I've listened to most of her presentations on YouTube, she said she would always say when she walked in a room, I don't want to see any ghosts. So ghosts right. never appeared to her, but they appeared to her whole staff in her house, but she never saw one because she totally believed in them.
But we owe so much to her for creating this please. Image of New Orleans as a haunted city, a Halloween destination.
Well, she was an intricate writer. I mean, once she bought that house on First Street, she would describe every detail of every plant in that place to such an extent that you really felt you were on the porch with her. And she just took you into the reality. And then because you were so deeply immersed in the reality, you could shoot off into some fantastic, powerful, because you were so much there, it could happen to you. Yeah, she was a great writer, and she's done, more for the city of New Orleans since Tennessee Williams than anybody else I can think of. You know?
I know, she's right up there.
And she wrote so much about the different graveyards. Maybe you could talk about that a little bit, Rory, the ghosts
and
the graveyards.
Yeah, you know, I think there's some, because she was such a deeply spiritual person, I think that people are drawn to her writings because of the question of God or of death or the supernatural and the beautiful balance of the seduction of vampires. I think even to today, people, you know that vampires don't necessarily exist. Maybe it's possible. But the fact that this idea of like being able to fly or being able to avoid death, how incredible could that be? It's pretty magical.
And as far as the city goes, her landmarks are so precise. Mm. So people really did feel they could come here and walk in her footsteps.
Right.
Which was a great gift to
New Orleans
tourism and to book lovers. I mean.
Yes. Yeah, and I would just add with the cemeteries. I mean, we talk about the city of the dead and these necropolises, New Orleans as a cityscape for death, where we can face eye to eye with these tombs, with our ancestors and relatives and friends who have departed. And a lot of these cemeteries, you know, you want to make sure that you don't go there alone. You don't go there at night. You go with a group. And, you know, we recommend going on tours because you don't want to be in a secluded space where either someone living is dangerous, but also there are the dead that are dangerous, too.
Wow.
So definitely be careful in the cemeteries. They are so gorgeous to look at. And, you know, even just going to Lake Lawn this summer with, you know, my sister and visiting our relatives' graves and walking underneath these magnificent oak trees. I was nervous about going to the cemetery, but it was so incredibly peaceful, and it just felt so beautiful that I felt almost like I was in a park.
Well, it's like that in Europe, you know. They have cemeteries as parks. People go have picnics there and everything. Life is so much connected to death.
Well, you certainly set people up for a number of wonderful pilgrimages in this
book.
I mean, there's so much to look at, so much to think about, so much, you know, in a way to hope for. We've been talking with Rory O'Neill Schmidt and Rosary O'Neill about their new book, A Haunted Guide to New Orleans. You can meet them Tuesday, September 30th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Rosary, Rory, thank you both so much.
Thank you, Susan. Love being here.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Arundhati Roy discusses and signs her memoir, Mother Mary Comes to Me, Saturday, September 20th at 7 at Baldwin & Company. This is a ticketed event. Alexandra Vasti signs Ladies in Hating, and Jamie Harrow signs Fun at Parties, Saturday, September 20th at 7 at Blue Cypress Books. Shaka Singor discusses and signs How to Break Free, A Proven Guide to Escaping Life's Hidden Prisons, Tuesday, September 23rd at 6 at Baldwin & Company. Mixologist Abigail Gullo will discuss early Americana cocktails using our First National Spirit apple brandy, and Chef Nora Wetzel will focus on German potato pancakes at two cooking demos. That's Tuesday, September 23rd at 6:30 at the West Bank Regional Library in Harvey, and again Wednesday, September 24th at 6:30 at the River Ridge Library. Rosary O'Neill and Rory O'Neill, the mother-daughter co-authors of The Haunted Guide to New Orleans, sign books Tuesday, September 30th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. The Last Laugh, Wit, Wisdom, and 10 Years of the Walker Percy Weekend is coming up September 19th through 20th in St. Francisville. Headquartered at Conundrum Bookstore, the weekend includes a full schedule of panel discussions, a book club, a front porch tour and bourbon tasting, a dinner, and an appearance by Sonny Landreth. Organizers say this may be the last time they produce this event, so if you love Walker Percy, better go. Visit walkerpercyweekend.org for information. The really big event coming up September 25th through 28th is Faulkner for All, presented by the Pirates Alley Faulkner Society and the English Speaking Union. Special guests include the Countess of Derby, Caroline Stanley, whose new book is The American Journal of Edward Jeffrey Stanley, 14th Earl of Derby, The Making of a Prime Minister. Other guests include National Book Award winner Justin Torres, Claire Hoffman, author of Sister Sinner, The Miraculous Life and Mysterious Disappearance of Amy Simple McPherson, former Louisiana Poet Laureate Julie Kane, essayist and fiction writer Andrew Lamb, novelist and diarist Thomas Mallon, and Faulkner authorities John Shelton Reed, Penny Morrill, Robert Sinclair, Lisa C. Hickman. Fiction writers include Robert Olin Butler, Yuri Herrera, Karen Essex, Maura Crone, Beth Ann Fennelly. Poets, Roger Kamenetz, Bill Lavender, and Dalt Wonk. Nonfiction writers, Errol Barron, Nancy Dixon, Peter Wolfe, Randy Fertel, photographer Josephine Sacabo, and publishers and authors of books about that lovable runaway dog, Scrim. Publisher Susan Schott and authors Margaret Orr and Michelle Cheremy, along with illustrator Matt Renard. The theme of this year's conference is Embracing the Marginalized, and there will be special sessions about the 50th anniversary of the fall of Saigon and the literature of war. Check out FaulknerSociety.org for the complete schedule. Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.